Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's all a hoax. It's a scam.
At a campaign rally in Louisiana Wednesday night, President Trump struck a familiar tone when talking about the impeachment inquiry.
And you know who helps them? These people right back here, the media.
But Donald Trump has been railing against the press since before he was elected president.
You are fake news.
Fake news. That was just fake news.
And fake news has since given way to Trump calling the media the
enemy of the people.
Trust in me. Just in me.
Late last month, Trump's war on the press escalated again when the administration announced that copies of the New York Times and the Washington Post would no longer be delivered to the White House. And the White House is now pushing other federal agencies to end their subscriptions, too. It's a tactic that's increasingly trickling down to the local level. Across the country, politicians are echoing his comments about fake news. In Citrus County, Florida, the Board of Commissioners recently invoked Trump's anti-media rhetoric when a local library requested a digital subscription to the New York Times for its patrons. Here's one of the commissioners, Scott Carnahan, speaking at an October meeting.
I agree with President Trump. I will not be voting for this. I don't want the New York Times in this county. I don't agree with it. I don't like them. It's fake news, and I'm voting no.
And it's a sentiment that might be on the rise. A study by Gallup for the Knight Foundation last year found that most adults, including 9 out of 10 Republicans, say they've lost trust in the news media over the years. I'm Tanzina Vega, and that's where we begin today on The Takeaway, when sweeping talk about the media has an impact on local resources and access to information. Joining me now are Kyle Pope, editor and publisher of the Columbia Journalism Review, and Zachary Sampson, staff writer for the Tampa Bay Times. Thanks to you both for being with me.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So, Zachary, you're there on the ground. Tell us about this decision by the Citrus County Board of Commissioners. How did the issue of a New York Times subscription even get to the level that it got to?
Right. So a couple of weeks ago, on October 24th, a small item came across the county commission's meeting, and it was whether or not the local library system should pay $2,700 for a digital subscription for all 70,000 of the county's library cardholders to the New York Times. And that, you know, like a lot of things on a county commission meeting agenda, for people who have covered a county commission meeting, seemed like a pretty quick thing. A couple signatures and you'd move on. But the commissioners sort of balked at it and said, no, the New York Times is fake news. We support President Trump. Why would we do this? And at that point, it became about a lot more than a small funding request or a contract or anything to do with something that was happening at the library.
Well, let's be clear. I mean, most of us have been to libraries. We know that when you walk into a library, one of the first things that you can get access to are publications from all over. This just happens to be the digital version of the New York Times. What has been the reaction, Zachary, from the community? Has the community said anything about this?
Yeah, that's a good question. So they're still having, I think, two print copies of the New York Times that are available at libraries there, but this would have opened up access to people with disabilities, people who couldn't get to the library to read it, just by having the digital subscription. So, you know, I think, as is the case with a lot of stories today, for the first week and a half or so, this was something that was playing out just in Citrus. That's a county that's conservative. It's about an hour north of Tampa. And it was, you know, people who were engaged in the county commission, people who were engaged in the library, who were emailing the commissioners to say, I support you, I don't support you, how can I donate to make sure we pay for this? But my colleague Josh Fiallo picked up on the story a few days ago, and it was in the Tampa Bay Times, and then all of a sudden it was in the Washington Post Reuters picked up on it. And at that point, it became a lot wider than citrus. And so everything that the local community is saying is almost being drowned out a little bit by what everybody across the country is saying at this point.
Well, first of all, Zachary, I want to say I'm very proud of local news outlets. So congratulations on you and your colleague getting the story out there. Kyle, want to turn to you for a minute. I mean, this is Zachary mentioned that obviously the blowback to this New York Times subscription, the commissioner invoked President Trump. Do you have a sense of how widespread Trump-like rhetoric about the news media has become at the local level, Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, it's spread sort of far and wide. What we saw first is this spreading abroad, where you had especially authoritarian figures around the world echoing Trump's rhetoric. We saw it very sharply in Brazil with Bolsonaro. We saw it in other parts of the world where people were picking up the exact language. And then quite quickly, it started to spread around the U.S. too. This is the first case that I know of where this subscription thing had happened. And remember that this came pretty much at the same time that the White House announced that it wasn't going to be paying for the New York Times anymore, which I thought was sort of a joke, because we all know that how obsessed Trump is with the Times and with what's in it. And we know that he's going to keep reading it. But it was a kind of performative thing. But even though we haven't seen this subscription move, we have seen a lot of efforts around the country with local jurisdictions, you know, for example, being tougher or more restrictive than they have been on FOIA requests, which is, you know, journalists filing open records requests with local governments. We've seen a lot of cases where meetings that have been open are being closed or restricted. And again, local officials are using this rhetoric of fake news and lack of trust in the media, and again, echoing the Trump language to justify their decisions.
And Kyle, I mean, is our local government supposed to even be in the business of censoring information at this level, whether it's access to FOIA or whether it's really, you know, libraries, which are community centers for so many people to get access to all types of information? Is it their job to say what readers and consumers of media and American citizens can and can't get access to?
Yeah, no, of course it's not. And Tanzania, I think the point here is that the overall climate around the press is being poisoned. And I think it's a really dangerous thing. I mean, I don't think most Americans have an appreciation for how fragile these First Amendment rights that are embedded in our nation's founding are. They're fairly recent. You know, the legal tests of these cases are fairly recent. So I think a lot of people take for granted that this is just something that we have that is kind of built into the American system, and it's not. So what you're seeing at the local level, I think, is, you know, it's always been, I mean, you began this by talking about trust and how trust in the media is low. And I think, you know, trust in all institutions is low right now. Trust in Congress, trust in the church, trust in schools, trust in sports figures. And the media is part of that. But I think, and so there's always been that undercurrent. But I think Trump sort of gave it a language. And somehow, papers like the New York Times and other institutions like CNN, even NPR, they become part of people's identities. You know, it's almost like a political identity to either be part of or not part of those institutions. And some of them have benefited. I mean, the Times has had quite a substantial bump in subscriptions because of this. But there's also a downside. And I think this downside is what we're talking about right now.
Yeah, I mean, and the New York Times is the New York Times. I've, you know, full disclosure, I've worked there. There is a certain, you know, cachet and also a certain footprint that the Times has that it's able to sort of weather some of these storms. But Zachary, you're a journalist for a local news outlet, the Tampa Bay Times, which has done significant work and won Pulitzers over the years. But what's your experience been like with this growing distrust in the media as a reporter? Are you feeling that from sources that you talk to and things that you cover?
Yeah, I think it's probably experiencing it a little differently than at the national level. But, you know, it is everywhere, right? This culture is kind of in all places that we go to report. But you don't really know what to expect until you're in those places. I've done a lot of reporting in the last year in the Florida Panhandle after Hurricane Michael, and that's a staunchly conservative place that has a lot of Trump supporters. I've never had any issue with being called fake news or difficulty with access to information in those places. I had no issue with it in Citrus County either, and have it on this story. But for us, I think what I see more often, and probably what's more insidious and a little bit difficult, is that people who pull the levers at the local level, people who have some power here, are using it. You know, you will have like a county commissioner or a city councilor who might use the term fake news, who might deploy that playbook. And that's where sort of the message from up top or at the national level, everything's kind of hyper-nationalized, bleeds down into local politics and into local news. And that doesn't come down to a question of media literacy, which is often what we're talking about when we're talking about trust in the news. It's manipulation, ultimately. And I think that's the thing that reporters at the national level, but especially at the local level, we're tilting against. You know, we have no interest in pushing a national agenda. We don't really cover President Trump. We're just trying to figure out what's happening here. And, you know, we do feel that.
Kyle, we're heading into, and I ask this question of every guest almost, we're heading into a pretty contentious election season coming up in 2020 and a pretty contentious election. With this trend, if we can call it that, what are your concerns in terms of the access that the access to information that the public has?
I mean, it seems like the concerns sort of run the gamut. And by the way, I got to say, I thought the piece that Zachary and his colleague did was really terrific. They really laid out what was going on and why it was important. And I think, you know, I think that what's happening on the local level to the news business is sort of part of this story, because I think that what we've seen, unfortunately, is a kind of decimation of local news around the country. And I think that's certainly affecting the kind of information that people are getting, and we're basically entering an election where a lot of the campaign messaging is going to be sort of geo-targeted, right, through like closed networks like WhatsApp and others. And the only way people are going to know what these campaigns are saying is if they're on the ground. It's going to be very hard for national news organizations to sort of know what is being told to the voters in Tampa or Des Moines or Denver in a lot of cases. And the lack of a local news infrastructure, I think we're really going to feel it in this cycle. And I think it's kind of a scary thing.
And I want to get Zachary's thoughts on that. We've got about a minute left in this segment, because Zachary, you are on the ground. We know that about 1,300 communities in the United States have totally lost local news coverage. I mean, it's one thing not to have to compete with a lot of other folks, Zachary, but has your job gotten tougher? Have you guys had to really make decisions on what to cover, what not to cover, because, you know, there aren't that many of you guys left on the ground?
Yeah, absolutely. The Citrus story is an example of that. We used to, as the Times, have a bureau in Citrus with 7 or 8 reporters, and now we don't. So that's a travel story at this point. But, you know, what I will say about it is that's sort of what we're talking about. This lack of trust in the media is supported by the fact that we're struggling. And so we're not in as many places as we used to be. That's not just national organizations. And so when we're not in those places, it can be harder for us to understand the people who live there. And it can be harder for the people who live there to trust and understand our intentions when we go to report in those spots.
Zachary Sampson is a staff writer for the Tampa Bay Times, and Kyle Pope is editor and publisher of the Columbia Journalism Review. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.